Our next case for argument is 25-1444, In Re Satius Holding. Mr. Price, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Jeffrey Price, representing Satius Holding, Incorporated. Satius requests that this Court reverse the Board's determination that Claim 1 of the 385 patent is obvious over Lindenblad in view of McCoy and Orr. The case presents a very straightforward claim construction issue that's dispositive.
So I understand that you're not counsel on the next case, but these two cases are in fact related, correct?
They are.
Okay, so this, just to help me for housekeeping matters, this case involves only Claim 1 and only the particular patent office proceedings.
That is correct.
And the other case involves Claim 1 and additional claims.
That's correct.
Okay, go ahead.
So just to give a little bit of background that's helpful, this is the second reexamination of the 385 patent. The first reexamination affirmed all three challenge claims, which were Claims 1, 11, and 18. Of the 385 patent because the board found that the prior art did not disclose a coupler designed to match the characteristic impedance of air in the location where it is to be used.
Well, maybe Lindenblad didn't alone, but McCoy and Orr talk about meeting the characteristic impedance of air.
I don't believe that's correct, Your Honor. In fact, the PTO admits that neither McCoy nor Orr mentioned the characteristic impedance of air whatsoever. This case is a strange one to come up in the obviousness context for that very reason. It's agreed that Lindenblad does not disclose matching the output impedance of a coupler to the characteristic impedance of air. That's not in dispute. The McCoy and Orr references.
Don't they disclose radios where the output impedance is matched with antenna impedances within the proper range?
It discloses antenna impedances with input impedances that are in the range of possible values of the characteristic impedance of air. However, they do not disclose the characteristic impedance of air at all, and they do not disclose matching that value. So while the characteristic impedance of air is a value that may change depending on where you are and what kind of objects are in your location, there is no disclosure in any of these references that disclose that you want to match that value. And that was exactly the problem in the prior art that the inventor identified. The inventor identified the problem with characteristic impedance change in air causes notches in the communications bandwidth, and couplers that were available at that time had that problem because they did not match the characteristic impedance of air. So as I understand the patent office's argument is that so long as a device is capable of matching the characteristic impedance of air at some location, it satisfies the claims. And that finding directly contradicts the board's earlier construction of the matching term from the first reexamination. It also conflicts with the board's determination that Lindenblad does not disclose that limitation. In reversing the examiner's determination that Claim 1 was obvious, the board specifically said that Lindenblad does not teach designing the coupler to match the characteristic impedance of air. And so instead, the board relied on a theory where so long as a device is capable of matching the characteristic impedance of air somewhere, that it satisfied the claims. And our position is that contradicts the construction that was applied in the first reexamination, and that construction should also apply here because of prosecution history disclaimer and because it's correct on the merits. I want to turn briefly to the argument that the construction proposed on appeal was forfeit. I think if Your Honors take a quick look through the record, that argument can't stand. It was the only argument made throughout the first and second re-exams for distinguishing the prior art. It was the only argument made for distinguishing the inventor's prior couplers, which had been cited against the patent. And so the board's new ground of rejection, which it adopted after rejecting the examiner's rejection, didn't apply that construction. We raised it on request for rehearing to the board. The board did not address that issue on rehearing either. And so we believe that this is a straightforward case where, you know, we disclaimed the broader construction that the board applied in determining that the claim was obvious over Lindenblad in view of McCoy and Orr. And there is no argument on the record that the claim one is obvious under that construction. That is the sum of our argument, Your Honor. So unless you have any other questions, I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Very good. Okay. Mr. Stalwart.
Good morning, and may it please the Court, Peter Stalwart on behalf of the USPTO Director. What we have from the board here is a straightforward obviousness rejection over the prior art. The board found that the 385 patent teaches a characteristic impedance of the air between 1 and 200 ohms. The board found that both either McCoy or Orr teaches amateur radio antennas with input impedances that fall in that range, in particular, input impedances of 100 ohms.
Is it enough that they teach that range, or should they teach not just that range, but since the air is a claim limitation, that teaches impedance through the air?
Well, what the board found, Your Honor, is that that part of the claim language is inherent in the obviousness combination, that because when you use one of these exemplary antennas for amateur radio for McCoy or Orr that have an input impedance that falls within the range of characteristic impedance of the air, when you put that with Lindenblad to do the matching through the transformer, you necessarily wind up matching the characteristic impedance of the air at some location. And so the board did not find that it was expressly taught to match the impedance of the air in either McCoy or Orr, but did find that it was inherent in the combination. And we don't really have an argument about that. Instead, what we have is sort of a unclear argument about claim construction. What Satius continues to argue is that somehow the straightforward case based on the plain and ordinary meaning that the board put forward isn't enough without really explaining what the enough is or what's missing. Where's the secret sauce? And they continue to quote and point to this passage in the specification that it's designed to match the inherent characteristic impedance of the air, but without explaining what that really means in terms of construing the claim, in terms of finding infringement, and in terms of how this court has to review the obviousness determination made by the board. What the board quite reasonably did is say, this is an apparatus claim. It calls for a coupler to have a particular characteristic. That characteristic is fixed, as Satius has acknowledged, but it teaches that that characteristic is matched to a variable that has a range. And so if the characteristic matches any value in that range, that's sufficient. And we don't really have any reasonable counter-argument or particularly something based in case law about claim construction to rebut that from Satius.
Why is it that you don't think prosecution history disclaimer can apply here?
For similar reasons, Your Honor, So in the prior re-exam, the consideration was a rejection over the prior art. And pointing to this same language, there was no real, the examiner was relying on an argument that matching the transceiver impedance to the impedance of a transmission line was the same thing as matching it to the impedance of the air. And the board said, well, that's not what the claim says. It has to match the impedance of the air. So you haven't really even put forward a prima facie case. And that's as far as the board went. So what Satius was arguing and what the board found persuasive is this claim language has to have some meaning. And the board honored that in this rejection that's under review. They overturned the examiner's rejection for anticipation over Lindblad alone for basically the same reason and said, but if we add McCoy or Orr with these antennas that have specific impedances
taught. The prosecution history disclaimer is about what the patentee says, not necessarily about what the board says.
I think that's true, Your Honor, but it's also that statement has to be viewed in the context of the argument that's being made. And what I've tried to express is sort of, I still don't fully understand the exact contours of what Satius thinks this means, and I think it's very reasonable, therefore, to think that if we haven't gotten there at this point, the board, and during the first reexamination proceeding, went as far as it needed to go to decide the arguments in front of it and viewed the statements that way, but that there was nothing specific enough to amount to a clear and unmistakable disavowal than the statements that Satius made, because it's not clear even what scope they're surrendering, because somehow this argument turns on design intent, and we don't even know how that's proper under this court's case law. So how could we even know what the scope of the disavowal was? If there are no further questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. In the first reexamination, the board agreed with this statement and incorporated it in its decision. The 385 patent does require that the primary winding be designed to match the most common characteristic impedance of the air where the wireless transmitter or receiver will be used, which is a modification contemplated nowhere in either TRAN, Claim 13, or Abraham 987, or TRAN. That's a clear disclaimer. The patent owner said that this is what the claims require. The board agreed, and they found the patent allowable over the art of record. It's textbook disclaimer. I think there's a question about how does this actually work, and it's very clear that you're designing a transmitter. It's designed to operate in a particular environment. You look to see what the characteristic impedance of air is in that environment. You design your transmitter to match that value, and you infringe the claims.
Anything further, counsel?
I have nothing further.
Okay, and thank both counsel. This case is taken under submission.